C4. Number 19A.
Now, today we take the Christianity chapters and we start with creation. Just remember that those Christianity chapters must always have the focus on idea. In the Word, the focus is on God or the nature of God. In the Christ, the focus is how God has the general translatability so that to appear and to manifest itself at every point as idea. When we have seen that God always translates itself in nothing else but in the form of ideas, then we naturally have as the outcome of it a realm of ideas. And now Mrs. Eddy is telling us about this realm of ideas through the four chapters. Christianity as the Word would be the chapter on creation. Christianity as the Word would have to show what? If Christianity is the realm of idea, naturally the Word, the statement, the presupposition would tell us, see that you have to do with nothing else but with a realm of ideas. You live in a universe of ideas, and the universe, inclusive man, is just idea. That's your creation with which you have to deal with, and with no other creation at all. Now, can we see how the Christ chapter link up with the Christianity chapters in this logic? We have just finished Footsteps of Truth, where we have seen that the Christ is retranslating a false consciousness out of itself, therefore retranslating a unscientific structure of consciousness out of itself back into a divinely scientific consciousness. But the great fundamental teaching and theorem of Christian Science is that consciousness determines our experience. That the moment we have a different consciousness, we have a different experience. The moment we have a different consciousness, we live in a different universe. The universe per se doesn't have to alter, but we alter in our consciousness and therefore begin to interpret the universe differently, and therefore we live in a completely new surrounding and things change. That's how the chapter on creation starts, that eternal truth is changing the universe. You can see the eternal truth, the footsteps of truth, through their change, through their impact on consciousness, changing consciousness, we begin to experience a new universe. Eternal truth is changing the universe. And now the chapter depicts that new universe. It depicts really how we, through the change of consciousness, we begin to realize an ideational universe. And it's very interesting to see right at the beginning in the first paragraph how she tells us that change is going on like taking off our mental swaddling clothes, which are tight, which are narrow, which are limited, and breaking the limits of mortal thinking, breaking the limits of mortal thinking how? Through seeing that we have to do but with idea. It is as if this chapter would say, get out of thinking and see that everything is idea. Because thinking is always limited. Thinking is limited to the thinker, whereas ideas are unlimited because they come from the divine mind. Here we have that terrific overturning, so to say, of the universe, saying, put off your swaddling clothes. They are so narrow, they are so tight, they are so limited. You can hardly move within them. Within them. Huh? Yes. Mm-hmm. I can't quite remember how it was when I was a baby with swaddling clothes, but looking at the mothers who have their babies on their table and putting on their swaddling clothes, they look really very tight in and can hardly move anymore, you know. Poor things. Here we get the freedom. Yeah, what a picture from a bachelor, huh? But it's so impressive, you know, that statement that as mortals drop off their mental swaddling clothes, thought expands into expression. You get that terrific sense of expansion and expansion and expansion. Actually, if you read that chapter through very quickly, and that's always a good method to get the overall tone of a chapter, to read it through quickly and to hear what is the main accentuation, what is that which repeats and repeats and repeats itself, you cannot help noticing that in it it's always a sense of breaking those limitations, therefore breaking the narrowness. She speaks here how to break the narrowness of belittling deity, or to have a limited sense of everything, you see, of everything, instead of having ideas that are infinite. It is breaking the limitation of physical finiteness, of narrow limits, of being bound, of formalism, narrowness, coldness, finite life, finite love, finite conception. Can you hear? Finite, 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 narrowness. That has to be broken, those mental swaddling clothes. And then she has the great statement here, the finite must yield to the infinite. It is as if she would say, now look here, if you have now one through footsteps of truth, the divine consciousness, that consciousness is about what? About mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Therefore you have in your consciousness a universe of ideas of mind, ideas of spirit, ideas of soul, ideas of principle, ideas of life, truth and love. You have that universe of ideas, and that universe of ideas is infinite. Just has no limits at all. That tone of infinity goes right through. You have terms here like vastness of infinity, limitlessness, allness, boundlessness, inexhaustibility, infinite range of spiritual immensity, unsearchable realm of idea. Do you feel how thought expands into expression? Just has no more boundaries. Ideas are really the only thing we know that are not bound to space and time. Values that are really spaceless, boundless. Even good thoughts are not infinite. Whenever there is thought, there is limitation. You start with a thought, the thought ends. It's still, so to say, defined by the human mentality, and is always limited. Always. Thoughts are limited. So why try to have the watered-down concept of Christian Science, namely with using thoughts and good thoughts and healing with thoughts, thought systems, thought transference. Give me a good thought. She has a strong thought, and so on. Let's see that what is really real, only real, limitless, are ideas. Ideas is the answer for matter. And if we see ideas in their whole structure, even the better, then we see them in their whole relationship within the whole. And actually, these four chapters here on Christianity want to bring that out step by step. Here in creation, she only first wants to show that we have to do with a realm of ideas, and then the further chapter tells us more about that nature of idea. Perhaps you remember this statement that you may always hear somehow and read in the textbook, God expresses in men what? The infinite idea. Not just idea. Here, see, man is not just defined as the idea of God. Here in creation, you see, it is that man expresses, that God expresses in man the infinite idea. Forever developing. Even that, it's not static. Forever developing itself, broadening, even broadening, and rising higher and higher. From where? From a boundless basis. You see this terrific statement saying what is an idea? It starts out from a boundless basis and not from a limited basis like thinking. It starts out from a boundless basis of the divine infinite mind. It's an idea that expresses itself infinitely, without beginning, without end. Yeah, it is an idea that is constantly developing itself. One would feel something that is infinite cannot develop itself. It's a kind of paradox. All the high teachings in spiritual things are always on paradoxes, because the moment we touch the infinite, somehow we have to speak in paradoxes, showing that though the idea is infinite, it's broadening and broadening, because it comes to us constantly as a further expansion of what we see as that idea. For instance, we have seen that perhaps we started out just with investigating the synonymous term and asking what are the ideas of the synonymous terms, and made a list of those synonymous terms and tried to get the tonality of these ideas. They were just ideas, so to say, as statements. But little by little, those ideas began to broaden. We began to see that there is relationship between them, that there is order, and we began to see the order of ideas. Therefore, the order of the seven, then the order of the Christ translate, it began to broaden out. Then we began to see that these ideas are not only ideas on one level of consciousness, namely on the Christian Science level of consciousness, where they deal with illusions, but that they are also seen on a higher level of absolute Christian Science, of divine science, on science itself. Then we broaden it further out and begin to see that these ideas have within themselves a self-operative law, the cybernetic law, that each idea acts according to a self-organized, self-regulating idea. Then we begin to see that an idea has infinite structure, that it is not just an idea, as if it would be just a statement, but that an idea has structure, therefore is related to the whole always. We had the synergy principle of the idea. You see, it just began to broaden and broaden, rising higher and higher, and to idea, because an idea is limitless, there is no end to it. So we can look forward that if we are pure enough and transparent enough, that the divine idea, when the time is ripe, only when the time is ripe. I don't think the time is ripe now. I think we are entering into a period of consolidation of what we have seen in the last 9 years. But when the time again is ripe, and we are pure enough, or anybody then who will be pure enough, will certainly be a transparency for, again, a higher idea. What that is, we do not know. We haven't the faintest idea in which direction this idea will develop. We don't know, but it will develop, because that's the nature of the infinite, that is infinite and not finite. So we are looking forward always to a future that is expanding, broadening, rising higher and higher from a boundless basis. The main thing is that we have a boundless basis, and that that basis is fundamental, and that it's pure, and that it's clear, and that it's definite, and only then we have a pure basis on which we can build on constantly, every year or every period, a new story on the building, until we have a high rise. So, also, say, in this chapter, she makes it quite plain that naturally, if we want to have a unlimited, unbound, boundless basis, that means that we have to be willing to lay down all that which is limited. Actually, I would say that we lay down the thought consciousness, that we stop trying to think that we have to do with thinking, and that all depends on thinking, that we have to drop entirely and see that everything has to do with the idea. Consider the seven subjects, and you take your summaries on the seven subjects. What therefore will we find in this chapter? In this chapter we'll find the nature of idea, or creation as idea, the realm of idea, and therefore depicting idea in its sevenfold nature. Now, again, we could say, if we wouldn't know the text, but if we would know the seven synonymous terms, we could ask ourselves now, what would we have to find here if from the standpoint of the seven synonymous term we would depict the realm of idea, the nature of idea? And I think the very first thing you would tell me without looking into the books would be to say, well, what is creation from the point of view of mind? You would say, well, creation is the infinite idea of mind. That mind is the creator, and therefore creation is a realm of idea, is a creation of idea. Therefore not what human theories of evolution, of theories of creation will tell us, that it is an evolution of matter. We will see from the point of view of mind that we see our creation is a creation of idea. We would ask, say, and that's what we have here, then we would ask from the point of view of spirit and say, now, from the point of view of spirit, what is that creation of idea? And certainly you would say, well, if I have to look at creation from the point of view of idea, you would say, ideas are really substance, matter is not substance. So that an ideational universe is substantial, that's what you have here actually, that spirit is the substance of an idea of a creation, that matter is not that substance. If I would ask you without looking into the textbook and say, what is creation from the point of view of soul, I think very soon you would say, well, that creation is a creation that is unbounded, not limited, because soul is never in its creation. So we would find that soul that is never in something. We would also see that creation is never in something. That creation is never limited. Here you have that statement that God expresses in man the infinite idea. Not the limited idea, because soul cannot be in the creation. So that creation is an unlimited idea. Never in anything. Never in man, never in the universe. It's only in God. The only in there is in God. If we would ask that same question from the point of view of principle, and would say, what is creation from the point of view of principle? We would say, well, it isn't just an accumulation of isolated ideas, but it would certainly be an infinite idea that is complete, that is perfect, just as its principle is perfect. Actually, this is what it's shown here, that she explains here, that man is not an isolated idea, that man is the sum total of all substance. Can you see principle in its, that principle has infinite ideas, but principle gathers them together always. Principle is always that holds all the ideas together into one system, to one principle. And therefore, there's not no isolated idea, so that at the point of principle, we would see creation does not exist of numberless isolated ideas lying around somewhere, but that we would see they all hinge together and are the sum total of creation is the sum total of all substance, as she says it here. If we would ask, what do we see about the ideational universe from the point of view of life? Well, perhaps we would see there various things, but one thing we would certainly see, that this idea is actually self-sustaining, self-supporting, self-providing, because life is the father of creation, that life has created creation, and is the father of creation, that the idea, creation, would reflect that fatherhood sense. So that we have here that man actually, or the universe, reflects the fatherhood of idea. This is an interesting subject here, that fifth one. I think it is worthwhile studying very closely, because it gives, so to say, for the first time in the textbook, the sense of the fatherhood of the idea. Not the fatherhood of God, naturally, because that would be the word. Column. Here it's the fatherhood of idea, that ideas father themselves, so to say. And here she depicts it, it's a rather long passage showing that actually we can father us and the universe how, and she shows that the way we can do it is that we have always a perfect model in front of us. See, fatherhood always looks at the perfect model, at an exalted model, as an exalted view. And then she goes on and says, therefore, we have to exchange the false view, the false imperfect model for the perfect model, so that finally we always look at that perfect model. That's now fatherhood of life. That we always look at the idea, always see what is idea, always look at the perfect model, have always in front of us the fulfilled model, and then see that this is, so to say, the only reality of being. That the perfect model, the perfect idea, is actually the only isness, the life of being. We have here these great statements which we always like, everybody likes that. Man reaches the absolute center and circumference of his own being. Can you see? It's nothing about God, not about the world. It's really the focus is on the idea that man, he himself, through the perfect model, finds, so to say, the perfect center and circumference of his own being. That he begins to be the center and circumference. No more God is the center and circumference. That God is the center and the circumference is his creation. Now man creates his own universe. He creates his own universe by being the projector of ideas, by looking constantly as only ideas, so he builds up his own universe. It's a universe of mind. It's not a personal universe. It's not a limited universe. So man becomes the creator through reflection, naturally. He reflects now on the high ideal, and the more we always have our eyes fixed on the perfect idea, we create a new universe around us, and so we call worlds into being, and become the center and circumference of our true being. Tremendous. See, in the world, vertical, it will always be God that is the creator. In the Christianity vertical, it will be the idea that is the creator. That ideas run and disport themselves. That ideas become the center and circumference of our own being. How the method is given, the method of life is given, just always look at the high ideal. This passage on life has a lot to do, when you read it, with the model, the perfect model to look at, that we have to have a perfect model in our consciousness, that we should drop the imperfect models, that we should stay with that perfect model, and staying with the perfect and staying with the perfect, we begin to build up around us a whole universe of ideas. Then, at the point of truth, the sixth subject, we begin to see if at the point of life she tells us about the fatherhood of idea, then in the sixth she will tell us about the sonship of ideas, not the sonship of God, that we are the sons of God, but that we can sonship ourselves and the universe. What does it mean that we can sonship ourselves? Means that we affirm and claim for us that we are the idea. That then we take possession of the fact that we are idea and but idea. And so we accept for ourselves and claim for ourselves and affirm for ourselves that we are the idea of God. And the seventh naturally would show us then the motherhood of idea, not the motherhood of God that we had before. Here it's the motherhood of idea, where we see that man, as she says, must gravitate Godward, that he must give up everything to fill his thought so that he only accepts and welcomes the perfect idea. That's what mother does. She welcomes the idea, she accepts the idea, she accepts the idea no matter what happens. It's interesting when you see that those passages which we don't like, namely all those passages about the loss of human peace, the loss of earthly hopes and pleasures, the loss of friends and so on, they always come in at the point of the subject love. seems as if love would always say, look here, you can only have a true concept of love if you let go of everything, if you don't mind anything. If you are so happy that you are the idea and that nothing can happen to the idea, that you welcome that idea, that you mother the idea, that you care for the idea, and just don't care about anything else, then you have touched the motherhood of the idea. And that's what she tells here too. She speaks all about the loss of personal friends. Friends will betray you, enemy will slander you. But all that for what? To lead you higher. To lead you higher, she says. Can you see how here in that love sense, we just feel that the love for the idea, the care for the idea, the trust in the idea, the anticipation of the fulfillment of the idea, these are the motherhood qualities of men. And so give us a sense, oh, what is the universe of idea? Here at this point is mothering the universe of idea. In that universe of idea, we have to mother the universe of idea and nothing else. Do you see how terrific this is? Huh? Just running through, you can see what is creation, what does creation consist of, first stating the nature of it in mind, spirit, soul, the nature of that creation of idea. It is idea in mind, it is substantial idea in spirit, it is boundless idea in soul, not limited. Therefore, in principle, all ideas are gathered together in one to some total of idea. And then she changes into the essence of the universe. What's the good of it? What do we have if we have such an idea? Then it says, well, then we have the fatherhood of an idea. We always can build up a new universe, always a constructive universe. We have the sonship of that universe, the sonship of idea, claiming what is true, taking for us and inheriting what is true as idea. Then the motherhood in love of idea, the motherhood of idea, caring for that universe. Loving it, caring it, not minding anything that happens. Just seeing the fulfillment of that universe. Isn't it terrific? Just to explain what is the universe of idea. So you can see the beginning of that chapter, she begins about getting out of the swaddling clothes of mental thinking. And she ends how? She ends again with the clothes. But it's no more the swaddling clothes. There she speaks right at the end of the robe of spirit that is white and glistering. White is the sevenfold, glistering. There is no fallacy in there, no evil in there. So that we see that through those seven subjects we have a terrific unfoldment, so to say, from how to get out of the limitation of thinking and accept the universe of ideas and see finally we have a universe of idea that is white, no evil in it, nothing that is lacking, nothing imperfect in it, that is white and glistening.